we encourage clients, if they want to get a test genetically on their number twos or their poo, to see who's in there or really who isn't in there, because that tells us a lot. And we use a company, well, we recommend a company called Microba, because Microba do something called metagenomic sequencing. And this type of sequencing actually is used on really complex samples. So our poo is very complex because there's a lot of bacteria in there that may not have been seen before. So it depends where you've been and what your background is and where you were born, all that sort of stuff. And this type of sequencing picks up everything, and it tells us who's doing what in there or who isn't doing what in there, which is the information that Cecilia and I really love. And when we get one of these reports, it is so exciting. I tell you, I just get carried away with myself. And Cecilia gets very excited too. So we've been chatting for ages about, you know, someone's poo.
About poo, great.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing, because it's really the window into someone's health.
That was Sue Reed, who's a fertility nutritionist at the IVF Project in Australia. And we're going to be hearing more from Sue and Dr. Cecilia Kittick, who is the founder of the IVF Project, talking more about the importance of understanding your gut health in terms of your fertility. We're going to be going into more detail about the microbiome in the gut on the Fertility Podcast today, which is responsible for key metabolic changes in PCOS women. And getting this right is a really important step. So we're chuffed to once again have PharmaSure sponsoring this podcast. And their product, Inofolic Alpha, contains alpha-lactalbumin. Now, that corrects the microbiome, which then reduces inflammation and increases the absorption of myoacetol. So the result is that it helps to alleviate the symptoms of PCOS and improves overall fertility in PCOS women. To find out more, just visit fertilityfamily.co.uk. Right, so Kate hasn't been with me for this little chat, as you might have noticed, because she had a little issue with her microphone. So we're going to get it fixed, and the pair of us having a little bit of a break through the summer months. We'll be back with you mid-September. So make sure you check out the show notes for details of how you can get in touch with us. We'll also remind you at the end. Dead easy though. I mean, our socials, I'm at Fertility Poddy and Kate is at Your Fertility Journey on Instagram. So we're now going to welcome Dr. Cecilia Kittick, founder of the IVF Project in Australia, and Sue Reed, who is a fertility nutritionist, to talk a bit about your gut health and how it impacts your fertile health. Now, the pair have been running a course recently. You might have seen Cecilia and I chatting on my Insta Live a couple of weeks ago. But first of all, ladies, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Natalie. And hi, Kate.
And hi, Kate.
Hi.
So this is quite random for us. It's quite bizarre, the brilliance of technology, because it's like the end of the day for you ladies in Oz, end of Thursday. It's the start of Thursday for us. I know holidays are about to happen, so you're kind of getting in that holiday spirit. But before you do, we wanted to just pick your brains a bit. So thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, when it comes to the key things that people get wrong when they're trying to eat right, when they're trying to have a baby, what are the big no-nos that people tend to do? I don't know, Sue, if you want to start.
Yeah, sure. Well, when we look at fertility or infertility, I should say, it's all about looking at the gut and how healthy the gut is. And like, as you probably know, infertility is usually associated with dysbiosis of the gut, increased inflammation, and a low microbiota diversity in the gut. So what we mean by low diversity is you don't have a lot of species of bacteria and you don't have a huge abundance. Whereas if you have a high diversity of bacteria in your gut, you've got a healthy gut. So that's fantastic if you are trying to get pregnant. So the big thing around what food you should be having or not having is to steer clear of all the ultra processed or showtime foods, as I like to call them, and focus on really good whole foods. And by whole foods, you know, I mean things that haven't been manipulated and processed. So things like beautiful vegetables and fruit and nuts and seeds and whole grains, all that sort of thing. And that's what we really focus on with our clients. And that helps you build a really healthy gut. So it's kicking out the things, and this is for the ladies and the men, of course. This is like kicking out the things that are like ultra processed meats and soft drinks and all that sort of thing, and just giving those poor little guys in your gut really what they're after, you know, because that's who we're trying to please, really, is to just get that gut nice and healthy and make them happy, because they will do a lot of things for us if we do that.
And you talk about, you mentioned there about whole grains, and I know that you talk about how that can help thicken your uterine lining and increase implantation and obviously prove success with IVF. Can you explain a bit more about that and what changes you would suggest that ladies made to help improve all of their success rates?
Yep, sure. So a lot of the ladies we see actually don't generally have whole grains in their diet, because it's a bit of a trend at the moment to, you know, get rid of carbohydrates. And I think carbohydrates are a really misunderstood food group. So we always talk to our clients about the goodness of carbs and why whole grains are so good for you. Because whole grains are full of so many vitamins and minerals and antioxidants. So by feeding your gut bugs these whole grains, they produce a lot of things, including, and I won't get into the short chain fatty acid thing yet, but they produce a lot of metabolites which feed back to help the endometrium grow and make everything more fertile. So it's all about, like, the whole grains. When you eat a whole grain, there's lots of fiber in there that we call prebiotic fiber. And prebiotic fiber is actually food for your gut bugs. So prebiotic fiber is a fiber that doesn't get digested until it gets down to your large intestine. And when it gets down there, it gets fermented by our beautiful bacteria, and it's food for them. So that helps them with that diversity issue that I was talking about before. So it helps them grow, it helps them become more abundant, and that leads on to numerous other reactions that can help increase the fertility. So there's so many things that go on in this system, but whole grains are one of those beautiful foods that when you include them, it gives you an abundance of great feedback, basically, yeah.
And Sue, can you give some examples of the whole grains that you really recommend? Because that's a question I get asked a lot about, you know, what should I be eating? What whole grains are good for me to eat?
Well, the thing is, what we focus on is lots of whole grains. Like, you can get a popcorn is a whole grain. You know, when you look at breads, for instance, pick whole grain breads. When you go for rice, pick brown rice. So there's quite a few choices. Even if you're gluten-free, there's quite a few choices for whole grains. And it's really important to look at, you know, how many you have per day as well. So we recommend about 4 serves per day, which is around about 48 grams. And it's just integrating little things into your diet. So for breakfast, for instance, you might have some whole grain toast with, you know, a nice egg or something on. For lunch, you might have some brown rice with some nice veggies and a little bit of lean protein. And for dinner, you might have, you know, some, I was going to say popcorn, but you won't have popcorn for dinner.
Having a movie night.
Yeah, you never know, do you? Yeah. But you can have, you know, some nice brown rice for dinner if you haven't had it for lunch. So you've really got to mix things up.
Okay. Would you, with PCOS, would you still recommend 3, did you say how many serves? Did you say 5 serves a day?
It's about 4 serves. Yeah, for PCOS, if you focus on the low GI carbs, that's the big thing with PCOS. So low GI carbs go slower through the system. They don't promote the big insulin spikes that the white carbohydrates like your white bread and white rice, etc., will create. So it's really important to focus on low GI foods, and that includes a lot of whole grains, of course, and wholemeal type foods. But that also gives you a lot of prebiotics and fiber that we were talking about before. So these things are all really important, obviously.
The whole grains are so important for PCOS. We often see women coming in that have tried to cut out carbohydrate on the understanding that they think they're taking a great approach, but that means they're missing out on all the prebiotic fibers that are really going to improve diversity in the level of the gut. And with PCOS, we know that those communities living in the gut look so different from someone without PCOS. So improving diversity is such a great therapeutic strategy for reducing testosterone levels that are high in PCOS for improving insulin sensitivity. And part of that process in managing comes down to eating the right foods to nurture your gut and ensuring that you can have carbohydrates. It's just the type of carbohydrate and how you pair them with other foods.
When we're talking about amount, then you also talk about the right amount of fruit and veg for both men and women can increase success rates. And we talk a lot, we've talked about it on the podcast before, about eating the rainbow. And obviously we're just talking about amounts with the carbohydrates there. And I know that people can feel overwhelmed by this, you know, when there's certain expected amounts. What would you say in terms of your fruit and veg? And also, if you're only able to maybe access your supermarket rather than buy organic, you know, and sometimes how do you know if you're getting the good stuff? What would you advise?
Look, there are so many, I'm sure Sue might jump in here afterwards, but there are so many ways to approach eating well to nurture that diversity in the gut that aren't necessarily expensive. And what we do with the clients we work with in our online courses is step people through the process from understanding, first of all, what am I getting in my diet? Because I think without looking at that, you can't really highlight the areas for people to invest their energies in or to address. And, you know, going through fertility treatments, probably one of the first things people are looking at and Googling is what foods are going to improve my chance of pregnancy. And everyone likes to, you know, are across eating the rainbow and fruits and vegetables. But it's so much more than that when it comes down to it. And we've had our clients that have had been trying to get pregnant for 3 years or for even 8 years, and they think they're eating well, and they come and see us and they're like, oh my gosh, I had no idea that my diet probably wasn't that great. And that doesn't mean that they're eating processed foods. It's just getting the balances right and making sure that you are getting the right types of protein in your diet, for example, because we know that high levels of animal proteins that will be broken down and cause an increase in trimethylamines, which damages, you know, follicles and impairs egg growth and things like that. So all of these sort of come back to looking at, well, yes, it's overwhelming, but get some good guidance to start at square one and step through so you really understand what you're nourishing your body with. And yeah, just little ways that you might be able to tweak that and optimize it. We're not about excluding any foods as such. It's a bit of balance in there, but yeah, making sure that something's sustainable and it doesn't have to be expensive.
So I've got two questions. This is a two-pronged question here. Firstly, because I'm always intrigued about dairy and it's something I get asked a lot about, you know, should I have dairy in my diet? And I'm actually quite a big fan of dairy. But I think there's probably times when it might not always be right. And then on that same note, if a woman is really curious about her gut health and how her gut health might be affecting her fertility, how can she find out about what impact her current foods might be having?
So dairy, for starters, yes, absolutely. A lot of people think dairy is bad or it's inflammatory or something, and we teach people about that in our course as well, but how great dairy is for you, the vitamins, the minerals, the calcium that they're missing out on if they cut dairy out. And as for how to get your gut tested, and that's what we encourage clients, if they want to get a test genetically on their number twos or their poo, to see who's in there or really who isn't in there, because that tells us a lot. And we use a company, well, we recommend a company called Microba, because Microba do something called metagenomic sequencing. And this type of sequencing actually is used on really complex samples. So our poo is very complex because there's a lot of bacteria in there that may not have been seen before. So it depends where you've been and what your background is and where you were born, all that sort of stuff. And this type of sequencing picks up everything, and it tells us who's doing what in there or who isn't doing what in there, which is the information that Cecilia and I really love. And when we get one of these reports, it is so exciting. I tell you, I just get carried away with myself, and Cecilia gets very excited too. So we're
chatting for ages about, you know, someone's poo.
About poo, great.
A beautiful thing, because it's really the window into someone's health, and that's what we love about it. And these bacteria are such amazing little creatures. And if we see, like, quite often our infertility clients, have, and male and female, have low diversity, like we talked about before. So getting these tests done shows us where they're low and what particular phylum or bacteria are low, and then we can help them get their diet back on track. And going back to the diet thing too, not everyone can afford to eat, you know, organic this and organic that. It would cost a fortune. So some of the good things to look for is even frozen fruit and veg, because most of the time those products are frozen as soon as they're picked. So they're going to still have their nutrients in them. Whereas you can buy things sitting out on the shelf for a day or two, and they may not have as many nutrients. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with buying frozen fruit and veg. I always look at where it's come from or how many miles it's taken to get there. But that's another option for people. And, you know, planning ahead and sort of meal planning and meal prepping is something else we talk about with our clients, because that seems to go out the window because everyone is so time poor. But just, you know, getting a few hours in your day to make that happen is so important.
And we want to talk about the men as well, because obviously we know that the whole process is a 50-50 male-female factor, and obviously diet can help sperm health. Can you talk to us a bit about that?
It's I'll jump in before Sue gives the expertise on the dietitian side, but it is just so important. We're actually writing a book at the moment called Fertile Gut, and explaining, I guess, the first part is, why do people have trouble getting pregnant? What is, you know, the causes of unexplained infertility? What does the literature out there tell us? And sperm health is so important, because it is, you know, 50% of the equation. And we know those paternal factors are so influential in that embryo development, and it has been implicated in early pregnancy loss. So very important. And it all comes back to, again, in males, they show that if you have a really beautiful, diverse gut microbiota, so that's all of the microorganisms living in your gut, lots of different species, that testosterone levels are higher. And it makes sense, because it's ensuring that balance with all of the chemicals that our beautiful gut microbiota are releasing to ensure our body's functioning optimally. We know that if you reduce the diversity in the gut microbiota, that sperm is damaged. Studies show this. And what happens is, one of the key links here is inflammation. And this is, inflammation isn't always bad. It's actually essential for implantation, and we need inflammation so that our body can fend off bacteria and viruses and things like that. But when those levels are high for prolonged periods of time, it actually will damage at down to the level of the cell and damage that sperm and DNA. So a healthy diet that's nurturing diversity of your gut will promote improved sperm health.
And it's so important, isn't it? It's a really important area.
Especially when when often men feel redundant.
Yeah.
You know, by giving them these practical tips, then hopefully they can feel like they can get a bit more involved.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I was about to say.
There is so much they can do. And that's probably, we even have men that will come in with their partners and have their number twos tested as well, because, you know, we can look at that and see how much, you know, their capacity of their gut to produce butyrate, which is a really key short chain fatty acid. We can look to see what their levels of inflammation are. We can even look and find out about their potential for producing different neurotransmitters like GABA to influence anxiety and depression, because it is all connected between the gut and the brain. And even what happens in the gut can influence our muscle strength and aerobic fitness. It is just fascinating.
Wow. Mm.
One area that women, not so much men, but women, spend an awful lot of time researching and can often be taking so many different ones are supplements. And it's an area that I'm fascinated in, actually, and have my favourites that I recommend. And I'm really curious to find out what you would recommend for gut health and also just to improve general fertility.
I'll jump in first, Seals, if you like. I'm not a big believer in supplements unless there is a real reason for it. Like where I live in Tasmania at the moment, we have low vitamin D in the population because it's not sunny, you know, that often. So people stay inside a lot because it's quite cold, which is probably something you might experience in the UK as well. So
what are you saying? That's a it's supplement. Boiling here.
Not. I live in the north.
It's very grey today.
Yeah. So, I mean, everyone takes a pregnancy supplement, which includes folate, of course. That's a given. But other things I think we can go a little bit overboard on because...
I agree.
Yeah. And I just think a lot of the time it's a waste of money. They've got into the what the marketing machine is telling them they need when you really don't need all that, because if you do look after your gut, our gut will actually help produce some vitamins, and it's really important to nurture them. I keep banging on about them, I know, because I love them to death, but there's things that supplements that we really just don't need. I mean, vitamin D is a yes, and some people just don't eat fish or fatty salmon or things like that, so omega-3s can be needed sometimes. But as far as anything else goes, I would say probably no, unless there's a medical reason, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. Those are my three go-to. They have to be the ones that I recommend. The only other thing that I do see great value in women with PCOS is inositol, but it has to be a really good quality inositol. And I see really good benefits in women's cycles when they take inositol. But yeah, I agree with you. I don't like it when women come to me with huge amounts of supplements, because I would much prefer that they got them from good nutrition. That's the most important thing, isn't it? Getting it from source is so important.
Yeah.
And the cost element. I had a conversation with somebody just the other day who said, oh, we've just spent a fortune on our supplements, so we can't afford to do X, Y. And you're just like, okay. Do you hear that often? I'm sure.
And we see some clients come in that have a list of maybe 12 things that they've been given. And when we actually look at them, because for each client individually that sees us, we will do a full nutritional analysis and look at all their micronutrients. And it's actually been so common for people to be exceeding the recommended doses and be in the danger zone, particularly for vitamin A and lots of other components as well. And no one realizes, because no one sat down and looked at actually totaling up all of the components in the supplements that have been taken. But there are so many reasons for whole food as well, in terms of the absorption from the food that's so much better because of all of the different cofactors that exist in nature that we just cannot replicate in a supplement. So with clients with PCOS, one key thing that we've seen really get women back on track with having regular cycles month to month to month is ensuring that they're getting enough prebiotic fiber in their diet. And that is because we know that's growing all the beneficial bacteria, it's improving their gut diversity, and that is translating then to all of those flow-on effects of lowering testosterone, regulating, you know, FSH and LH, and, you know, getting that menstrual cycle back on track.
Now, what are the other things that the IVF project is all about is exercise. And I'll share the previous chat, Cecilia, that you and I had a couple of years ago now about that. And you promote this 8-week course of fertility, nutrition and exercise prior to an IVF cycle, talking about how it can improve chances of having a baby by up to 52%. Can you just talk a bit more about the exercise side? Because it is a big question mark that people have, especially if they are into their fitness and then they're kind of almost told, you know, that they have to stop. So can we talk a bit more about what it is and a bit more about the evidence around all of this?
Oh, absolutely. And it's something I'm so passionate about, because we know that there are so many benefits to exercise that you cannot replicate in a pill, you know, talking about supplements. You cannot just take one thing that's going to improve your energy, reduce body fat, increase your metabolism, ensure you have better sleep quality, improve your brain function, reduce, you know, the risk of metabolic diseases and other chronic diseases. All of that comes from exercise. So it's really so beneficial when we talk about fertility, because of the reason that a lot of the processes that drive damage to cell and to eggs and sperm, and even impact the receptivity of the uterine lining, are you know, come back to high levels of inflammation and oxidative stress. Now, exercise is one of the best anti-inflammatories going around. And for women with PCOS in particular, they have very high baseline levels of inflammation. If you go and take a biopsy of their muscle tissue and compare that to another lady who doesn't have PCOS, you will see that even just sitting around resting, those levels of inflammation are very high in PCOS, and there's lots of mechanisms that drive that. Now, if those women with PCOS go out and do a 30-minute walk, they reduce those levels of inflammation back down to what is seen in a healthy person that does not have PCOS. It is actually, in essence, you know, the anti-inflammatory effect of exercise is so potent in improving egg quality and sperm quality. With males, we know that men that start engaging in a regular aerobic exercise program and resistance training, their level of DNA damage is reduced. So when you look at the sperm, all sperm has some level of DNA damage, but when it gets higher, we know that that influences fertilization rates. We know that that impacts on typical embryo growth and development, and we know that's one of the reasons for recurrent pregnancy loss early on. So exercise can reduce that DNA damage. So exercise can even change, primarily in animal studies that have looked at aging, because it's very difficult to do that long term in humans. But in models of aging, when mice exercise, their chromosomes line up beautifully when you're looking at the eggs and the division there. So, oh, just so many benefits.
So when you mention about fertility nutrition and exercise improving your chances of having a baby by 52%, is that your own research that you've done and you found that that improves their chances, or is that research that you've come across? Where does that 52% come from?
So that will be from research studies. So, and in women with PCOS, it's even reportedly as high as 300%. And in our work, we actually see about an 80% success rate. And this is in working with clients that have, you know, yeah, undergone multiple IVF cycles and multiple rounds. It's often, you know, once clients have been through unsuccessful IVF treatment that they will come and see us. So we're not dealing with sort of people often in that I'm healthy, I want to come and see you and have a baby. That would be great if everyone planned like that. But, you know, we're seeing the clients that have had trouble for a long period of time.
So when people ask, can they exercise once they've started their protocol and they've started their cycle, we're talking about kind of gentle movement. Because I know people are told not to exercise, and I've always been a bit confused by that. If you've actually started, and I know that there's specific things around egg collection, egg transfer, embryo transfer, what do you advise?
Yeah, so it will depend on the client's, you know, previous level of fitness and activity before they come in, because as soon as you start a stim cycle, those stim drugs will increase inflammation. So it's about getting the right balance between promoting excess inflammation acutely, which happens when you engage in an exercise session acutely, but over the long term, you'll start to see an increase in upregulation of those antioxidant defenses and other anti-inflammatory pathways that really provide the benefits. So exercise and nutrition, it's not something you can do for 24 hours and expect that you're going to see the great outcome. It really is about that investment of looking at, you know, the time it takes for that sperm and egg to develop. So really looking at a sort of 12 to 16 week lead-in to improve those underlying mechanisms. Now, during treatment, there are times when, yes, you do need to potentially modify your typical activity. And that comes around the fact that, you know, as you're stimming and your ovaries are getting bigger, there is a very small risk of ovarian torsion, because essentially when your ovaries are that big, it's like a little sort of hammock in there, and any kind of, you know, really aggressive movements, there is a potential for those ovaries to flip, but it is so rare. It is very rare.
Yeah, very rare.
Yeah, because the consequences of it, you know, are quite severe in terms of that you could lose an ovary. There's always, you know, that's why we talk about it, even though the risk is so, so minor. But you'll often find that when your ovaries are that large, I know I didn't feel like going out for a 10K run, so, you know, or doing a high intensity aerobic class. So clients are actually quite surprised by how much they can do because they have previously been told don't exercise. Whereas we know that, you know, heading out for a moderate bout of walking is, you know, so beneficial in terms of improving all of those markers that are associated with health. It actually increases blood flow and will encourage, you know, blood flow to the uterus and things like that as well. So movement is so important too, because we often, it's such a neglected side, but thinking about resilience and making it through the 2 week wait and all of those elements that affect our mental health and well-being. So to pull activity from someone, you know, the consequences of that could be far-reaching in terms of mental health and well-being.
Agreed, totally. Well, like I said, we'll share the initial chat that we had where you go into more detail about the exercise. Thank you both of you for explaining. We'll put all the links to finding out more, but we just wanted to give a kind of overview of the importance of gut health, because as we both see, there's so much confusion and people are almost doing too much at times and taking everything out. And we want to ensure that people are really understanding what they're doing and where they can find more support. So thank you both.
Thank you.
Yeah, so lovely to talk with you both. Thank you.
Lots to think about there. And the IVF Project are running their next Fertile Gut Masterclass on the 17th of August. The link will be in the show notes if you want to get signed up for that. And Kate and I, as I said at the start, are having a little bit of a break through the summer periods. We will be back mid-September. So make sure you're following us on our socials. I'm at Fertility Poddy. Kate is at Your Fertility Journey. So you don't miss when we are back. You can also subscribe via your favorite podcast app so that you'll just get it instantly. And in the meantime, if you are heading into fertility treatment or you've been trying for a while, it's not happening and you're just starting to stress more about it and you're feeling overwhelmed by all the stuff that's out there, I've been talking about how I'm now a Freedom Fertility Specialist, which is all about helping you deal with the emotional toll that this struggle to conceive can take. I've recently run a challenge in my closed Facebook group for group sessions. At the moment, they're all full. I've got a waiting list at thefertilitypodcast.com, but I have got some spaces to work one-to-one. So if you need more support, because the mind-body connection is so powerful when it comes to your fertile health, and making sure that your emotional well-being is in the most neutral state possible is what I'm working with you to help you get better at, rather than constantly getting triggered by stuff and being in this like stressed and heightened emergency state all the time, and please do get in touch. Like I say, the details will be in the show notes. You can just visit thefertilitypodcast.com or get in touch with me on my socials. We're having a little break. We'll be back soon. There's loads of previous episodes for you to check out. Thank you as always for your support, and until the next time.